Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
As you were heading into the second leg of the playoffs, a 0-0 draw between Norwich City and Leeds United at Carrow Road this afternoon means it's all to play for heading to Elland Road this Thursday. Welcome to the latest edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with Coleman's of Norwich. I'm Connor Southwell, joined by Samuel Seaman, Adam Harvey, Mr. Paddy Davitt. We've rushed you through team training. You're back for the big occasion. How are you? How are things?
Like a glory gig, so I thought I'd join you boys, get me out of the house. Yeah, very well, very well. Yeah. Although, and we've discussed this on the walk up and we'll get into this, it wasn't the best of games, I think it's safe to say, from an entertainment point of view. When you've been up until the early hours with a 4-week old trying to get her to go to sleep, I absolutely immensely enjoyed that afternoon today because my wife's not watching, but not having to worry about bottles. Burping, winding. That's not my wife, by the way. That's my 4-year-old. I know it wasn't the best affair, but it was great to be back. Great to be back with you lads. And on to Leeds we go.
Indeed. We've got plenty to discuss and dissect from a game that was very, very cagey. Very, very cagey indeed. Probably lacking in quality. Both managers after the game probably content for different reasons that they walked away with a draw, no points, ahead of obviously a second leg. So probably going to ask you each individually, and it'll be interesting to see how individually you're all feeling. So Sam, let's start with you. I mean, sat here, a couple of hours or so after the full-time whistle, how are you feeling about what unfolded at Carrow Road today? Missed opportunity, feeling pretty positive, where'd you sit?
I think I'm unfortunately somewhere right in the middle. It almost feels like nothing's happened. To be honest, I think it's obvious why it would be a poor result for Norwich, because we spoke going into it about how much they've struggled away from home, how good Leeds are at Elland Road, and the fact that probably it felt like they needed to at least take a lead to Leeds. That sounded strange, but they needed to at least take a lead there, if not a couple of goals. And for that reason, it doesn't feel especially great. But equally, when you saw that game play out, and just how much of a nothing affair it felt for so much of it, there was a little bit of worry, I think, creeping into the minds of probably most Norwich fans that somehow Leeds would produce a moment and win a game that probably neither team deserved to win, really. I suppose there's also the fact that Leeds are a better team than Norwich, and it's now gone from a two-legged affair over 180 minutes to a sort of one-game shootout. But when you consider the fact that that will be in front of the Leeds fans, in a stadium that is well known for its hostile atmosphere, that does sort of change the dynamic. But I don't think David Wagner will be especially disappointed with it. In fact, he wasn't, as he said, when he spoke about it. And based on how he's done the playoffs before, you know, it's going in the same direction. So, I think both managers will be pleased with it in different ways. Farker probably has more of a right to be to be pleased about it for me. But given we still have something to analyse, to talk about, to look forward to on Thursday, and it's not a result that effectively writes off Norwich's playoff ambitions, I feel that there are positives to take. So yeah, I'm somewhere in the middle, but I don't think it's a great result, to be honest.
Adam, you I think were the only one pre-game of us that was predicting a Norwich City win. It obviously didn't go that way. Finished, as we said, 0-0. A very difficult, cagey, tight, nervy game, I would say. And obviously we're recording this now in the knowledge of the other result, which was also 0-0. I think it's the first time since 2011 that both semi-finals have ended 0-0. How are you feeling sat here right now about what unfolded at Carrow Road this afternoon?
Yeah, a little bit mixed. I mean, like Sam pointed out, I think, you know, it's 90 minutes closer to Wembley in some ways, in that it's now just down to one game. And I kind of, I suppose, get a little bit of confidence out of maybe the way they applied themselves at Preston. It could be a similar kind of feel maybe this game, in that it is kind of a one game shootout, which, you know, could define what way it goes. And they dealt with themselves in the manner of that game well. So I think that's the kind of performance I hope they can then take to Elland Road and try and replicate. I mean, whether that's, you know, what fans want to see is a different story altogether. But in terms of just trying to nullify the threats of Leeds, which I felt they'd done today to, you know, pretty well. You know, you look at Somerville, didn't really get him into the game. Fuck Jack Stacey, done a good job on him. Nonto, you know, Farker spoke about it post-match, the fact that they frustrated him. He then got booked off the back of just, you know, getting in his face. He's obviously a young player that, you know, you get underneath his skin and he might flip. So I think Norwich have maybe got those sort of components in their back locker that they can take to Leeds and try and use. It's going to be difficult. You know, it's going to be a Thursday night under the lights, Elland Road, top atmosphere, tough. But it's been done before, and, you know, I think you've got to take a positive mindset there. It is a bit of an opportunity for Norwich to get to Wembley. You know, they're going to be up for it. The fans are going to be up for it still. So just enjoy the ride, and yeah, let's see what we get. But yeah, mildly positive still, more than negative, I'd say. I think if they'd have lost today, you know, let's be honest, we're all going into this podcast in a much worse place. Even if they've won 1-0, I still think we're probably analysing the game in a similar manner, in that they've still got to go to Leeds and with a job to do. So to me, yeah, the more positives to take the negatives.
And Paddy, finally for you, how do you sit here today? Because as Adam said there, I think irrespective probably of what happened today, they were always going to have to go to Elland Road and do something, be it protect a lead, be it chase it, whatever. So the fact that it's even, the fact that now it's been reduced to 90, potentially more than that, minutes of football, and potentially that's the distance they are from Wembley. It's difficult to look at that negatively, I'd say, but is there a case of opportunity missed, given the home advantage, given the Carrow Road crowd that they had today?
You could look at it that way, Connor, but no, I think what we had was, you know, and it's worth reiterating, we may reiterate it quite often in this podcast, a manager in charge who's been over this terrain with Huddersfield, and you plot the route back that he did. 0-0 first leg, goalless home tie against Sheffield Wednesday. They went to Sheffield, another Elland Road-esque bear pit, I'm sure, that night at Hillsborough, and prevailed with an own goal, 1-1, went to extra time pens, they won on pens, and then they beat Reading after a 0-0 at Wembley on pens. So I'm not saying we're in for that identical, but it just underlines, doesn't it? Because I'm sure those sort of feelings may have been replicated if you had anything to do with Huddersfield after that first leg that year, and look how it played out. No, I'm tipping into the optimistic part of this discussion now, because I go back to that Elland Road game in January. They lost 1-0. Yes, it was an early Patrick Bamford header, but there was a spell there in the second half, and Farker himself on the night post-match referenced it, where Norwich were actually in control. And I know today the stats show you that Leeds had a lot of possession, but, you know, Nunes and McLean, which is why I fully expected him to go Nunes and McLean today, but with a look back to what happened, they actually controlled that game in the second half. They didn't really have the punch. Josh Sargent, who we'll get into on getting, I'm sure, it was just coming back from injury, and they didn't really, you could draw a parallel today, actually. They didn't really feel like they had too much at the top end of the pitch, but There was no, when they last went to Elland Road, sense that they rolled over. And yeah, of course, they had to ride the luck a little bit. Somerville was good that night as well. Angus Gunn had to make a save or two. But, you know, you can only maybe go back to your most recent experience of going there. And yes, it can be an intimidating place. But, and I watched Farker's pre-match last night, actually. and off the back of losing 4-0, was it at QPR in their final away game, and then Southampton beat them in their last Elland Road game. You know, he was having to bat away questions about trying to lift the fan base again because the psychology of it, and this was something that Wagner referenced after they beat Ipswich here, that the team who just fell out of the top two would have to deal with that baggage of, and it's turned out to be Leeds, you know, you've got 90 points on the board, you've got all these sorts of club records they've broken, and yet, unlike Ipswich, unlike Leicester, they're still only a 1 in 4 chance with the other three teams involved. So that psychologically, and it's a young team as well, you know, average age, as you said to me before kickoff, 24. You know, it is a young team of players they've got there. These are all factors which I think give Norwich a decent chance now. I really do, because they're not going to a Leeds who are absolutely flying and putting away all comers. They're going to a Leeds who, you know, have stumbled at the end of the season, missed out on what felt like they were going to follow Leicester, for me, out of that division in the top two. That hasn't proven to be the case. And yes, they may look at it today and think they've come here, they've not got beat. And going back to Elland Road, you know, it's advantage Leeds, and that may well be the case. But I mean, David was talking about Norwich being underdogs before a ball was kicked today, and that still remains the case. But the expectancy now is firmly on Leeds' shoulders that they will now, more so now after getting a 0-0 today, we'll see Norwich off. But I think there was a telling quote from David post-match today, and you know, he said every second that passes at Elland Road on Thursday and they're still in the tie, i.e. you know, level or maybe even better, is a minute in Norwich's favour, which I kind of see where he's coming from. I think that crowd will turn. I think they will turn if Norwich can just stay in the game. Ideally get their noses in front, and then let's see how a young Leeds team react, because they've not been in that situation, whereas there's a lot of those Norwich players have, and their head coach certainly has been in that position. And I just think that experience could tip this now, with one caveat, and that is obviously the situation fitness wise with Sargent and Barnes, because if you were to have to go to Elland Road with neither of those two players, then disregard everything I've just said in the last 4 or 5 minutes, because I just don't see what other options they would come in to give them something at the top end of the pitch that would trouble Leeds. I think it would be just a backs against the wall job. And at some point, with the attacking armoury they've got, you saw it today, they're bringing on players like Dan James, they're bringing on Pirro and Jaden Anthony as well. That's even with Bamford injured. You know, it just underlines they cannot go to Leeds and just sit back and hope and maybe try and play for penalties. It's just not, I don't think it's feasible to do that. So they will need to carry a threat at the top end of the pitch. So, subject to the next few days delivering some positive fitness news in terms of Barnes and Sargent, yeah, I really do think Norwich can do this, and we'll be heading to Wembley.
Okay. Well, we're gonna separate this, Paul. We're gonna focus more on the Elland Road game in the second half. So, well, let's reflect on the game that was first and foremost, Sam. I mean, and I guess we'll start the day with the start of the day, which was the players coming in on the coach to what was an incredible sea of yellow. You had flares out there. You had, well, you were out there, so maybe you're better placed to put a number on it than me. But just felt incredible. And actually, you know, I drove past the ground about 8:30 this morning, and there were loads of people in yellow shirts then. It had everything about it that felt like a big game occasion. And I felt, interestingly, that atmosphere that was created outside was then brought inside and probably translated onto the pitch in what was a really bright 30 minutes to begin with. Talk to me a little bit about what it was like being out there for that coach arrival with all those people and all those supporters.
Yeah, it was good. It was, I think, positively intense would be how I would describe it. I think there probably were just about thousands of people there, which an hour and a half before kickoff is a very good number. And you could sense that the players were enjoying it. They were getting off the bus and smiling when they looked up and they saw everything that was going on. And I'm sure they would have got a boost from that. So although I know a big strand of it was probably rivalry with Ipswich, and there was a lot of talk about that on social media, I think if you just separate that, whatever it is, it's always good to see people getting behind the team. And I think I heard you saying it actually before the game, and it really stood out to me today, that yellow and green, when you can get people in yellow and green, it's a fantastic way to get behind the team. Because it was something, actually, because I'm not from here, when I used to come to the stadium, I loved so much that you get to Carrow Road and it just felt like this hub of Norwich City. And you don't get that at all grounds, you know. You don't get that distinctive feeling that everything in this area is about the football club, but you got there today, and you know, 2 hours before kickoff, as he said, even before this, the greeting the bus, everyone was in yellow and green, you know, the sun was out, and it really did feel like everything was about Norwich City, and in a game where probably most of the national attention was on Leeds, everyone was talking about Leeds, and Norwich definitely went into it as underdogs. I think the fans did a really good job of making their team the protagonists rather than just the accessory to Leeds' attempt to overcome their disappointment in the promotion race. And yeah, being in there was definitely intense. It was definitely interesting. It wasn't my favourite breathing experience of all time, and my hair did go a slight tint of green for a few minutes. But apart from that, it was really, really good to see fans of all ages enjoying it. And although I'm sure you can't have that every week, I think it's the sort of thing that Norwich fans would love to see on a more regular basis. So hopefully the team can keep delivering these sorts of occasions, and the fans can keep making the most, because that's what you have to do when you're a football fan, really. And you, there's been a lot of talk about the future and looking ahead, but when it gets to games this big, you have to just focus on the now. And I thought Norwich fans did that in an amazing way today.
Yeah, and it was something actually that Kenny McLean picked out before he was even asked a question on it, really. He described it as special and spoke about how much the players appreciated it. And I guess that all sort of adds to that sense of occasion that today did feel like, irrespective maybe of the game in the end, probably not living up to maybe its billing and the sense of occasion that was created, that it definitely was there. And Adam, as we said, that kind of translated into a really quick start for Norwich and actually produced probably what I'm describing is a lot of nearly moments, and probably just lacked a little bit of quality in the final third. But the thrust, the intent, the energy, which I think a lot of Norwich fans, and it's been a real hot topic of conversation, the build-up about how they would approach it. Would they be quite submissive? Would they go and try and be proactive? It was a proactive start for Norwich City this on this occasion.
Yeah, I think the players fed off kind of that energy and the intensity in the stands from minute one. I mean, you know, on the ball City, when it rung out, you know, you could sort of feel the hairs on your arms sticking up, because you know the sort of the passion that it was delivered with, you know, and the intensity, I suppose, and the noise of the fans early on was really set the tone, I think, actually, for the game. You know, Norwich were quite quick at the traps, and you know, maybe they didn't really create the level of good opportunities that maybe they have in recent home games, and you know, that maybe lent itself to allowing Leeds back into the game a little bit sort of later on in the first half. But you could sense that, you know, the fact that Leeds fans were quite quiet, that maybe they were sort of sensing that sort of, I suppose, nervousness in the Leeds side. You know, the goalkeeper a couple of times, Melier, you know, sort of a few loose passes, and the defence looked a little bit shaky. And I was hoping Norwich might be able to sort of utilise that and get the goal they required, just to kind of maybe put Leeds on the back foot. Obviously, that didn't happen. And then, you know, I think maybe there was a little bit of nervousness in the Norwich crowd when Leeds started to grow into it a little bit, and maybe the noise levels slightly dampened, but not to any sort of, you know, quiet levels. Just you just sense it, you know, that the fans were on edge a little bit and just hopeful that they, you know, could see it out, you know, in terms of this game, and then, you know, look forward then to Thursday. But yeah, certainly the noise pre-match. I mean, they played Sons of Mark, which I think we can take a little bit of recognition for in terms of what we mentioned in a pre-match or pod, sorry, a few months back now, and the pre-match build-up with that was pretty good. I think, you know, that sort of maybe brought that sort of emphasis of sort of the we united and we're all one, sort of, as Sam mentioned, about kind of that feeling that, you know, every Norwich fan is in it together. And obviously had the rail seating as well in the Snake Pit, which I think probably helped as well in terms of the atmosphere in that corner. And it'll be great to see that, you know, next season in the Lower Barkley as well. So, yeah, obviously I know we'll come on to kind of the second half. But I thought the first half, you know, Norwich adapted pretty well to what, you know, what was in front of them, and probably quieting at Leeds and their fans down quite a bit.
Yeah, I think you could see in the first half specifically, Leeds looked very shaky, very nervous. I don't think that they necessarily took that intensity in the right way. And that, this is probably where I think if there is one regret that, and Kenny McLean said this as well, but if there's one regret probably that those players have sitting in their sofas tonight, is probably the fact that they weren't able to cash in really on that pressure that they created in the first half an hour, when Leeds did look vulnerable, and they probably, the ball was like a hot potato, wasn't it, from their perspective. And obviously, you know, Daniel Varka spoke about it pre-game. We've seen it with results of late as well. There is clearly a confidence issue within their losing 4-0 to QPR, losing at Southampton, dropping out, obviously, the automatic promotion race. All of that stuff felt like it was kind of present in a nervousness and a nervous energy that was within Leeds. And that's going to be interesting. And again, we'll look ahead to the second leg a little bit later. But it's going to be interesting to see how they adapt and whether that energy is something that they can shake off in a more sort of positive setting, or whether that is something that kind of pops up again in the second leg. Is going to be interesting to see. Paddy, there are a couple of decisions that Daniel Farke was asked about post-match. One being the one on Borja Sainz that was on Nonto, wasn't it? And then there was a goal that was ruled out for offside on Jorginho Rutter when the ball was sort of played through and he was offside. Duffy then sort of poked it around Gunn, and I think Firpo ended up putting it in. That was obviously then disallowed. Farke okay with one and a little bit frustrated, stroke annoyed with the other. Is that fair to say?
Well, he's actually very annoyed is what he said on the second incident. And then he went on, as he's been known to, a bit of a monologue about, you know, we've had 12 letters apologising for various officials' errors across the season. I think in the middle of that answer, it was if VAR had been in this season in the Championship, Leeds would have gone up automatically. So he clearly is less than impressed with that decision today. He was adamant that the footage that they had, irrespective of what this broadcaster's put out, showed that Rutter was onside in the build-up to that goal. The first one, yeah, just to clear that up, it was just on the edge of... He said in real time he thought it was a penalty when Sainz clearly didn't get anything on the ball and got plenty of Nonto, but he did admit, well, having seen it back, you know, the initial contact was outside the area, so not a penalty for him on that one. But the second one, yeah, very, very annoyed, to directly quote him, because, as he said, when the stakes are so high, he talked about the £100 million game at Wembley, you know, he has an expectation on himself that he gets his decisions right, and he expects that from the officials when you get to this type of game. So whether that'll be allowed to slide, or whether he might be getting another letter of a different sort, I don't know. But it was there was certainly no fence sitting there. He was adamant that, and as he said, at that stage, I think it was half an hour in, wasn't it? The game is totally different then. The game that's turned on its head. You know, you have a different game of football then. Norwich have to probably go a little bit more adventurous, maybe risk a little bit more. That might have played into Leeds' hands. And who knows how big a moment that could be when we get to the dust settling on Thursday night.
And Farke more generally, I mean, you covered him throughout his whole time at Norwich. Is there a degree more caution now about his teams? We've watched them play through three times, maybe less so the first Carrow game, where obviously they were 2-0 down and had to go a bit more gung-ho. But certainly the last two, that last game at Elland Road coupled with this one, there has felt sort of a streak more pragmatism in him than perhaps there was at Carrow Road, when we did see Norwich pretty gung-ho most of the time, really, irrespective of if they conceded 3, 4, 5, whatever.
Yeah, but then when you've got Buendia and Pukki in their prime, it's a bit easier to sort of, you know, unleash the dogs, as it were. But that said, I mean, Somerville and Nonto, with Rutter in the mix, Bamford less so, some serious attacking power. That's not even throwing in James and Anthony as well. So I don't honestly know how many goals they've scored this season. My sense is that they scored quite a few. I know they've... But to underline your point, I think he did talk about they've got a record number of clean sheets this season for Leeds. So that in itself, that stat in itself would suggest...
They're 20th, I think.
Yeah, so you know, maybe he has become a little bit more pragmatic. And that was always the charge leveled, in particularly when he got Norwich into the Premier League, that you cannot set up and go the same way as you did in the Championship to huge success, 2 titles, as we know, and that brand of football, that maybe that lack of pragmatism in the Premier League was his downfall. And if that's the case, you know, maybe he's reflected on that in his various coaching stints since. I'd probably have to study a little bit more of Leeds. I'm not really, bar the three Norwich games now, I've not really seen enough of them this season up close to draw their parallels, you know, with those Norwich sides he built. But wasn't that one of the Barb's that it's certainly maybe early Farke at Norwich that he would just pass for almost passing sake. You know, there was a lot of lateral stuff in those early days at Norwich. And then, of course, when you get a Buendia and you get a Pukki, then you become a bit more expansive. So maybe it's just haven't quite got the players he wants to play the style that we know he loves. And he's had to be a little bit pragmatic this season. And, you know, it's kind of gotten to a point where maybe that was crystallised in that last 15-20 minutes that Sam touched on, where they were very firmly in the ascendancy in terms of ball possession, but never really... I can't remember Gunny having anything of note to do in terms of saves. So they didn't put their foot on the gas at that point. Whereas maybe Farker in his Norwich heyday, you know, it would have been the sound of the trumpets kind of thing. So, you know, we'll see what plays out on Thursday, because very much the expectancy will be they will have to go for it. And he did touch on that. He said that, yes, we will, but Norwich are very good on the counter, and if you create too many spaces for them, they can punish you. So even in that answer, you know, you're getting a sense that, you know, he's certainly not going to roll the dice. He's going to have to, in his mind, be a little bit more pragmatic about how they go about the task on Thursday night.
Yeah, and that's going to be really interesting. And that probably brings us on to the second half, Sam, where obviously then Norwich have to make changes, and we've spoken about squad depth so many times, but I think you could see a clear drop in performance from what Norwich City produced in their first half with probably what was that strong team, with John Rowe at a level where he could contribute compared to maybe where he was for the first 10 minutes of the second half, which was flagging, really, and likewise with Sargent and various others that we've mentioned already. It kind of felt to me, and it was interesting, David Wagner said that he just thought there was kind of a almost like they neutralised each other, really, and each other's threats. You mentioned Somerville earlier on, but Norwich never really got Gabriel Sarra into the game hugely. Josh Sargent, I felt, really struggled by his levels and his standards that he set since returning. But it felt to me that last period, as you mentioned, where Leeds were on top, where they were in the ascendancy, there probably wasn't that willingness to go and kill the game in the same way, because I guess this is what the second game creates. It doesn't create that sense of urgency. And I think by the time it got to 75 minutes, it looked like two teams who were happy to call a truce and head back down the tunnel and get on with Thursday, really.
Yeah, that wasn't a great watch, that last little bit. I think the start of the second half probably had a similar sort of pattern, if a little bit less exciting and with a few less chances. But then, yeah, it gets to sort of 65 minutes and it almost just felt like everyone there was waiting for it to end. And yeah, as you say, you could sort of understand why. I think that was another point where it probably was a positive that Norwich were able to see it out as a draw, because, as you say, the team that they had on the pitch at the start compared to what they had at the end was actually very different. And it is an issue with that squad depth, the players that Wagner has to choose from on that bench. It really isn't enough to impact a game at that level. And to be honest, it isn't really even at a level where you can trust them to keep the level the same or even just give you a bit of extra energy. I mean, obviously the Sydney Van Hooijdonk situation is one that's been discussed at length, but from what we've seen, can we really say that Wagner's been wrong to do what he has? I mean, maybe he could have been chucked on for a few more minutes just to get him ready for a situation like this where he may be needed to play the full 90 on Thursday. But in terms of the quality that he's shown, if the evidence in training is similar to what he's shown actually on the pitch, then can we really say that Wagner has been wrong to treat him how he has in a footballing sense? Probably not. And yeah, I think that underscores the level of option that he has. I suppose this is where injuries come into it, because even Ono Hernandez, who I know has had his detractors and has struggled to maintain a consistent output in terms of end product, I think even he gives you a decent level coming off the bench in the Championship of fear and energy and fear in defenders and energy on the pitch that you can sort of use. So I did actually feel for Wagner a little bit in that scenario, and that's not necessarily to agree with the criticisms that he's made of maybe the transfer policy that there's been. I think if he had had Shemislav Puerta and Adam Forshaw on the bench, I'm not sure the situation would be any different or that we would be talking about it in different terms at all. But the squad for me is not close to the same level of the other teams that are in the playoffs, especially Leeds and Southampton, and that's probably why I haven't completely agreed with some of the analysis that suggested this team should be doing better than it is. I think this team is probably about where it should be at the moment, and I think you saw that for the last half an hour. So that was a sort of period where I was thinking, actually, if Norwich can escape with a draw, that is a fairly decent result, because it was a position where, to be honest, the starting 11s might have been third against sixth, or even the quality of a third versus fourth or fifth. But then towards the end, you're looking more at a team that's finished third versus a team that probably would finish 11th or 12th. So I thought they actually did well to navigate through that period without any real danger and get the draw out of it, because, yeah, that was a pretty dire end to the game, and a lot of that was to do with the squad depth that Norwich lack.
And Paddy, just for the final word on this leg, really, we've got to speak about Josh Sargent, who obviously limped out of the game. Quite concerning, really, because it's one of those where he went down seemingly without incident, and you know, they immediately called Van Hooijdonk in, and he received treatment and then sort of disappeared down the tunnel. But it does sound like he's going to be in a position to play in the second leg, hopefully all being well. But Wagner did leave himself a little bit of wriggle room.
He did, and you know, we're recounting a Wagner assessment, which was immediately after today's game. He hadn't spoken to the player. He hadn't really had much of a dialogue with the club's medical department. So, you know, in the days and hours that follow from here, you know, things could change. But his sense was, paraphrasing, he's a tough boy. I hope and I think he will be ready for the second leg. So, you know, you wouldn't feel he would come out and be quite as, you know, optimistic as that if the initial sense from even a brief touch point with the player and the medical team wasn't, you know, that today was more a precautionary matter, that he felt it. David felt, I wanted to clarify, was it the ankle that, you know, he had the near 4 months layoff with and the surgery, and he said he thought it was. So, and we know there was that period when he came back initially in January, and you know, he wasn't able to train a full block every week, was he? And he was just having to be managed through and a lot of painkilling, you know, treatments. And, you know, so if you're Josh Sargent, you know that part of your body now more than you would willingly wish to know. But if you were getting anything at all, drop to the turf, get off the park, and hopefully by that course of action, because it was only 6 or 7 minutes left in today's game, you know, he is fit in the intervening period with the right treatment to be involved, because, as we said right at the outset, you know, a guy's, I think he's got 18 goal contributions in 26 league games either side of those 4 months out. He's an absolutely pivotal player, albeit today when he was more or less asked to do the Barnes role, that's not him. You know, trying to fight Joe Rodon with his back to goal and hold the ball up and others play off him, no, that's just not him. And we saw it again. We saw it today. If you were in any doubt, that's not Josh Sargent. He needs Ashley Barnes doing that role, and then he plays off around him. And the sense we've got with Barnes is that he probably will be in the mix Thursday as well. You know, I think David gave you a hint of that, didn't he, pre-match, when initially, take it back a week, it was kind of, well, he might be fit for Wembley if they got there. But I think in the intervening period, you know, it would seem that he's managed to get himself back out on the park and doing a little bit of light work at Colney. And if that's the case, then, you know, this is a game now, and this is a scenario where players who are, you take the chance, because there's no tomorrow. There's no, if they don't do the business on Thursday, that's it. That's the season finished, done and dusted. And the Premier League's gone for this season anyway. So I think if there's any chance those two players can be available in the matchday squad, you know, obviously maybe there's another debate to be had about, do you start both of them? But certainly in the matchday squad, you get them in there, because as they've shown when together, and follows off the back of the Van Hooijdonk chat, they offer a dimension that simply you cannot get from any other mix of attacking players in this Norwich squad, in the way Wagner wants to play out of possession as much as in possession.
I think they'll both beat Elland Road, but we'll see how it unfolds. Second half, as I said, we're going to look ahead to Thursday's trip to Yorkshire, which is daunting but not insurmountable for the Canaries. See you in a second. Welcome back to the Pinkham.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with Coleman's of Norwich, as ever, the very finest mustard in the land. I was very disappointed, actually, that there wasn't any this morning for some breakfast sausages, but that's a different debate entirely. We're going to spend the second half of the show, as outlined, looking ahead to Thursday's trip to Elm Road. You could sit here, and I think, as we've probably all discussed, Norwich City not in the best position that they could be in, given that they've drawn this game, but definitely not in the worst position that they could have been either. Probably somewhere in the middle, depending on how full you decide to see this particular glass of water. Adam, it's clearly going to be difficult, and it's clearly going to be hostile, but there is probably an element of truth in what David Wagner said. Games like this, they're about surviving blocks of time, aren't they? And if they can do that, then I think what might be viewed as a pretty hostile crowd to begin with against them, that will be for turning. That will be there to hopefully use to their advantage. So that has to be the key, doesn't it? They have to try and turn that crowd from a positive energy into a negative energy towards their own team on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, Paddy touched on it. You know, you go back to January and you could send grab because Norwich were on a little bit of pressure in that clear-cut chance. And I think when you're a Leeds fan and maybe you've had similar situations before, you know, they've been in playoff battles and maybe that seeps into your mindset a little bit. You know, I remember Derby going there, you know, I think they were behind actually, and they went there and under the lights, big atmosphere, you think this is probably a foregone conclusion that Leeds would get over the line. And that, you know, particular evening, Derby done a job on them. And again, that sort of frustration, you could feel it in the crowd post-match. And I think the fact that some of their fan base are maybe not having Farker, and you kind of look at kind of the maybe last 5-6 games of the season, and plenty of them feel maybe they threw it away and they should already be on the beach and, you know, enjoying promotion back to the Premier League. I think when you've got that element as well in the fans' minds, it's just all about frustration for me. If Norwich go there and absolutely frustrate their fan base to the highest of their ability, really, and ideally get themselves in front, I think, you know, then they can almost use that as kind of a way to navigate this game. You know, and it all, again, comes back to experience. You know, I think Norwich and David Wagner as well, you know, have experienced positive playoff campaigns. So maybe that helps them psychologically go into a place like Leeds, you know, under the lights, where it's going to be hostile and it's going to be lots of pressure and, you know, lots of intensity and everything that, you know, comes with that game. I think they've just got to use it as an opportunity. They've done it before, the players, the coaching staff, the management. They've got that experience, you know, the likes of Barnes, Duffy, you know, McLean. They've all kind of been through similar situations before. They'll know how to navigate this, where that Leeds squad is a lot younger, and some of these have never maybe experienced, you know, this kind of game before and this kind of intensity and what it means. You know, it can effectively mean Wembley and promotion to the Premier League, or it could mean, you know, another season in the Championship. And for me, I think the fact that would be deemed complete failure for Leeds if they don't go and win this game and get to Wembley and get back to the Premier League, you know, where Norwich, you know, I think most fans that probably go back to sort of November time didn't expect them to be anywhere near the top six. So the fact we're here and we're going to Elland Road with a one-game shootout with the opportunity to get to Wembley, embrace it, and hopefully the players will do that. And I think if they do, and you know, they can get that Leeds crowd turned against their home side, then they've got every opportunity, because I think, unlike Norwich, where, you know, you've seen it in recent games where they've been 1-0 behind and the crowd still get behind the team and they respond to that, I'm not sure the Leeds fan base will do quite the same, given kind of all the context that's wrapped around the end of the season.
Will it come down to, Sam, who is the better at handling the pressure and those mental aspects that Adam has just outlined there? Because, and as Paddy said as well, there's an element of truth to it, which is Norwich can't just sit there and absorb pressure all game, because that's probably not going to have the desired effect either. Leeds have too much quality to do that over 90, if not more, minutes, extra time as well, potentially. Is it going to be about who can handle the occasion, the pressure, better?
I think that's probably an aspect that's more important for Norwich, because that's what they have over Leeds. You know, if they make it a battle and they make it something that comes down to those fine elements and those small margins of experience and being there before and coping with the pressure, then that suits them down to the ground, because, you know, as I said, that's what they have over Leeds. Whereas for Leeds, it's probably more important to make it a game about quality and about forgetting about that atmosphere, because they, I mean, you can see the evidence over the number of points they've amassed this season compared to Norwich. They have more quality. They have the better footballing team. So for Norwich, it's maybe even about making the most of that atmosphere and embracing it. Whereas for Leeds, it's the opposite, and trying to forget about that, trying to forget about what's maybe riding on the game, and just seeing it as a footballing contest. I think that's actually what Norwich did the last time they got through the playoffs, by forgetting about the fact that it was a derby. And I know we've referenced that a few times in sort of the lead up, but there's clearly evidence that if the team that's better can make it about that, then there will be success in it for them. So I think in different ways, coping with that atmosphere is important to both sides, but in a way, it almost comes down to Leeds to then set the tone. Because if Leeds can't cope with the atmosphere, that's where Norwich really needs to come into their own and hammer that home. Whereas if they can, and it doesn't affect them, you know, without being overly negative, it's going to be hard to see how that gets Norwich over the line, because ultimately it's not going to be something that affects Leeds. Leeds will be able to play their football, and if they're able to do that consistently over 90 minutes, it will be very difficult for Norwich to emerge without having lost that game. But so much of football and tactics and preparation, especially at the highest level, is turning it into the sort of game that you can win. And I think that's why the preparation will be really important. Getting it right strategically will be really important, and getting the players ready in the right way. And to be fair to David Wagner, if you could pick one manager to do that on a one-off occasion, you know, he's done it before in the playoffs, and he's proven several times as Norwich head coach and at other clubs that he is good at doing that. So I think they're in a good position with that. But yes, it's hard to say without knowing how Leeds are going to react. However, you base it on the evidence of today, when they probably weren't really that close to their best at all, and you say Norwich have a decent chance in the sort of psychological department.
I spoke to Alex Neil this week, who obviously navigated the playoffs for Norwich, and it was interesting listening to him speak about that 2015 campaign, which was unique in itself because obviously that was an Ipswich semi-final, but Norwich were obviously in the position that the Leeds were, and he spoke about maybe the slight disappointment that they felt as a group of players actually missing out on automatic promotion, which obviously was in play after what was a magnificent run towards the end of the season. Actually, maybe ironically even, it was a defeat at home to Middlesbrough which probably squashed that in the end, and he said it was probably that defeat that enabled them to win the final, so to speak. So it's funny how these things work. But he spoke about the first leg, second leg element of that Ipswich game. And he said actually that first leg against Ipswich going to Portman Road was just about not losing, because he felt that Norwich had better players, and in front of their home crowd, that would be sufficient enough to win the game. So if you're Daniel Farker, are you viewing it in that sense almost? Because Sam's right, if this is a football match and this is about who's got the better players rather than maybe the elements that we've spoken about, and Norwich bringing the mental aspects into play and cranking up the dial in terms of the frustration at Elm Road, they're going to find it difficult, aren't they, frankly?
But it's not just any football match. This is a match to basically the self-styled richest game in football at Wembley. It's not 3 points, it's not two, it's not 1 point, is it, on the line? This is all the chips on the table. This is 46 plus, as it will be then, two more games all on the line. So, and I'll reiterate what I said, this is a very young Leeds team. Lots of very talented players, yes, but not been placed in that type of situation. You know, I think of, you know, Ampadu and Dan James, just picked them two out. You know, they've had, Wales got so close and got done, didn't they, by Poland in the playoff qualifier as well. That has to, as a young player, that negative, corrosive, toxic experience, that has to stick with you. They won't be over that yet. They may find themselves in a similar situation on Thursday night. Archie Gray clearly is going to be an unbelievable player, but a very young player to handle that type of pressure and expectation. So I don't think you can detach. I take the point, but I don't think you can detach that if it comes down to a pure football match, Leeds pound for pound probably do have better players, and not probably, you know, 17 point difference in terms of finishing positions in the league table would underline that. Over 46 games, they were superior to Norwich. But it isn't that. It isn't about that anymore. That's gone. And this is now about who can hold their nerve. And it isn't about who has got the better set of players. It's got who's got the set of players who will be able to when their backs are against the wall. And don't forget, let's go back to that pre-Christmas, late autumn period, 7 defeats in 9. You know, this group of players, as much as it was about David Wagner and is it time to go, David, this group of players were being put under the microscope as well, and having to play in pretty difficult and challenging environments at Carr Road. And, you know, when every pass or misplaced whatever, bad decision seemed to be jumped on. And they came through that because, you know, they've got experience and they understand what it takes to navigate a path through. And I think all those experiences will help them now going into this game, because there will be, and you touched on it, there will be adversity on Thursday night at Elland Road. There will be spells when they are up against it and the crowd are up, and you know, you might need Gunny to come to your rescue a little bit. But they've proven time after time after time this season, as AH said, you know, to go from that point, that real low 7 defeats in 9, the manager's on the brink, this set of players of letting every fan down, to now potentially 1 game away from Wembley, shows you that they do have that mental toughness and that resilience. And we just go back to this time last season. What was David Wagner continually talking about as we went into his first summer transfer window? Mentality. I need to add mentality. I need to add the right type of players. And at points this season, it maybe felt, well, he's gone too far down the path of maybe players who are past their sell-by and are not able to go with these younger up-and-coming teams and players. But maybe he was right all along, and maybe that when push comes to shove on Thursday night will be what gets them across the line. And ultimately, Leeds have to prove that they can handle this situation. And you have to be honest, Zoom out of touch, they should be now on the beach. They should have gone up with Leicester. You know, they were a better team than Ipswich pound for pound. But it's Ipswich, fair play to McKenna, who's got them up and Leeds haven't. So is there a question mark around this very talented but young, primarily, group of Leeds players? Because they fell short when it mattered in terms of the race for the top two. Now another question will be asked of them on Thursday night, when all the expectancy now, particularly after this game today, is that basically if you're outside the Norwich bubble, it is Leeds turn up, Leeds win. But let's see.
Yes, football doesn't work like that. And Adam, whilst we're talking about the Norwich approach, I mean, for as much as it is going to be about frustration, and that inevitably means probably soaking up periods of pressure, adversity as well, it's important, isn't it, that Norwich have an outlet, probably in a similar way to what we saw in that Ipswich game at Carrow Road, where they did threaten. There were points that they kind of looked like doing it today without ever really being able to. And that was largely because of A, their quality in possession, but also Sargent, B, Sargent probably not being able to hold the ball up in the same way as maybe Ashley Barnes offered you in the physical outlet. And for him basically playing up there by himself allowed Rodon and Ampadu to stalk him a little bit more freely than perhaps they're able to when Barnes is occupying them as well. But that is so important, isn't it, that they do have a route out. Because, and we saw it today, there are vulnerabilities in that Leeds team. You look at the spaces they leave centrally in midfield, you look at how high they push their fullbacks on, particularly with, and it was interesting to hear Daniel Farke reference it post-game, with how good they are in transition, that feels like where they're going to have to make their moments matter.
Yeah, I think that's probably been a theme of them all season, really. You know, you look at some of the sort of away games, you know, it's been tough on the road at different points, but some of those really gritty wins where they've had to dig in deep, you know, Hull, they're under the cosh there for 90 minutes, really, but it was on the counter. John Rowe, that little bit of magic to find the bottom corner, and then obviously they, you know, as Hull were sort of putting on the pressure, trying to get an equaliser, they struck the second through Christian Fashnak, and then that was enough to secure a really big 3 points, and arguably, looking back now, that's the 3 points that's got them in the position where they're in now in terms of in the playoffs. So for me, they've got to almost replicate that, you know, and frustrate the home crowd, allow them, if they want to, allow Leeds to, you know, have the ball and try and pile the pressure on. They can't do that for 90 minutes, but they can certainly do that for large periods as long as they defend well and utilise it and be clinical at the other end when they get the opportunities. And that's maybe been the fine margins at different points in sort of recent games. You know, I mentioned the Preston game earlier, just a fine margin of Gabriel Zara, a little bit of quality, you know, and that was enough to secure the win that day. And I think that's kind of what they've got to use. You know, I didn't think they used set pieces particularly well today. That could be an avenue to success. You know, they've done it a few times this season where these sort of routines that have been put together by the coaching team, you know, particularly in those sort of game scenarios where they've worked it well and they find the corner. And I think it could be that sort of one moment of magic game that defines that. You know, I think today we saw it was cagey. It's probably going to be similar at Elland Road, and I think that's one thing that Norwich have got in their locker. They've got Gabriel Zara, they've got Borja Sainz, they've got Josh Sargent, that, you know, in those scenarios where they get one opportunity and it just requires, you know, that little moment of magic, then those are the players you want that can provide it. And I know Leeds have got similar in their ranks, but I think, you know, they're a lot younger maybe, and I think maybe you look at their side on paper, there's the expectancy where Norwich maybe don't have that. So hopefully they can utilise that, you know, on Thursday, and that might be enough to get them over the line.
How much does the away record come into matters, Sam? It's obviously been something that's been debated a lot more probably in the second half of the season and quite how poor that's been. Norwich have done better against teams higher up in the table, to be fair, this season away from home. They took points at Ipswich, Southampton. Obviously, they're poor at Leicester, got beat at Leeds, lost to West Brom, beat Hull as well. So the top seven, they have taken some results against, but... Yeah. I guess this is a debate again about how relevant you think those type of statistics are. So I'm asking you, how relevant are those type of statistics?
I think less relevant against Leeds because in terms of on the pitch especially, things don't change as much as maybe they would if Norwich were playing a team lower in the table. For me, the main problem away from home, and yes, there are obviously atmosphere issues and the fact that you're not, you know, where you're used to being and you've travelled a long way to be there and things like that, but just in terms of on the pitch, for me the main issue was the fact that Norwich, I felt, was setting up tactically quite different away from home, especially against teams you felt they were better than and should be beating and should be more proactive against. They weren't doing that at times away from home, and that was where it was really frustrating to see them draw with Blackburn and QPR and, you know, really struggle against teams that were in the bottom half of the table, that it really should have been simple wins for Norwich if they had taken the game to them. But against Leeds, you know, you look at that performance at Carrow Road today and Norwich were the home side, but tactically, if you had just, you know, put that in a slightly different stadium and it was at Elland Road, you wouldn't have been surprised really by the setup. And, you know, it's hard to criticise Wagner for that because there's no way he's going to try and be really expansive and play attacking football and extremely proactive in a playoff semi-final against Leeds. So for me, it makes less difference in this than maybe it would in a game against a team where Norwich were maybe the favourites. In fact, there is that element of how Leeds deal with the crowd and things like that. Everything we've basically already spoken about in terms of the mentality and the intangible aspects of the game, they could actually tip in Norwich's favour given the mood around the Leeds fan base at the moment. So, you know, for me, that has been a pretty consistent worry throughout the season, and for it to have manifested in the same ways so regularly has been quite concerning. But against those top teams, I mean, you referenced that record and some of the games they've played away from home, it doesn't seem to have made as much of a drastic difference against the teams in the top half of the table as it did against the bottom half of the table. And the differences between their record at Carrow Road compared to on the road against those teams is much smaller than the difference was, you know, in the other games. So, yeah, for me, it's not as much of a worry. Of course, it is still a worry, as anyone would be worried going into an away game compared to a home game. But yeah, it doesn't play as big of a role for me as it did in some of those important games towards the end of the season. And I think that's a positive for Norwich, to be honest.
Before we get to predictions and how the guys are feeling heading into that trip, we are going to do Bring the Heat. I'm going to change it ever so slightly though, and I've just thought of this on off the cuff, so it could go disastrously wrong, but I don't think it will. So instead of looking back onto today's game, because let's be honest, there was very little in terms of there, unless you want to say Marcelino Nunez, who I thought was good, your new list as well, you could throw in there. Jack Stacey, as you mentioned, did a good job on Somerville. It's going to be slim pickings, right? So let's be honest about that. So I'm going to reframe it, and we're going to do a who's going to bring the heat for the, or who needs to bring the heat for the second leg against Leeds. Paddy Davitt, you're up first. Who needs to bring the heat for you?
Well, I mean, stating the obvious, to suggest that Norwich's most creative player this season by some measure is the Brazilian maestro Gabi Zara. And if Barnes and Sargent are fit, then I think you can get him into areas of the pitch where he can be far more effective than he was today. I think off the top of my head now, he's, 25 goal contributions in 47, as it is now, Championship plus one playoff game. The man's quality is there for all to see. And in what it feels like, it's going to be nip and tuck, it's going to be tight, it's going to be tense, through the fingers, watching a lot of the time. You need a difference maker, and he is a difference maker, whether it's a set piece, whether it's something in open play. And I just think, if, fingers crossed, those two forwards are available, that can reposition him in an area of the pitch where he's done his most damage. And there's no doubt, you know, Farker referenced that Elland Road game earlier in the season in his answer as to why Archie Gray played in a more 10 progressive role today, and he felt Norwich were very good that night, in that area of the pitch, and that Leeds didn't really have enough control, and the players he referenced were Sara, Nunes, McLean. So, you know, they, as you would be, if you're in the Championship, you will know about Gabby Zara and know, if you're Farker and his coaching team now, that going into this second leg, he is the danger man, really, because he has proven time and time again he has the quality. So if he brings the heat, Norwich are at Wembley.
Yeah, indeed. Fun fact about him, my mum actually washes his dogs, which I discovered this week. He's got three dogs. I think he's got Corgi, some big dog, and he's got three dogs anyway. Yeah. And it takes them to a dog groomers that my mum works at. And I only know this because obviously he did that interview in The Guardian. He was speaking about his dogs, and like me, clearly a big dog person. And I was telling my dad about it maybe.
So
your
mother hadn't thought to mention
it. Well, she didn't realise there was a connection. So this is the connection. So I was reading it because in the Guardian piece that he did, he was speaking about his dogs and sort of he was speaking about the value that they've and how they've helped him sort of adjust to life in Norfolk. Really interesting stuff. And I was speaking to someone who I live with about it, and my mum was interested because she loves dogs, was interested in what the breeds are. And I said to him, and she was like, oh, what are their names? Because I washed three that are exactly like that. And then I said the names and they matched up. So yeah, that's a fun story. And also, I don't know what it is with Norwich City footballers this week. Saw George Long walking his dog as well on Thursday night. So there you go. There's something in the air about Norwich City and dogs at the moment. Adam, who needs to bring the heat for you?
Gunny between the sticks, I think. You know, it's a game where we spoke about maybe fine margins and Gabby Sarah maybe producing a piece of magic at one end. I think Angus Gunn at the other end. You know, we've mentioned maybe the intensity and what, you know, Leeds have got in terms of the attacking areas. They're going to create opportunities 100% at Elland Road on Thursday night. And if he stands strong and produces the levels of performances we've seen from him really consistently across the whole season, you know, for me, I mean, David Wagner said, I think we've all said it at different points, an absolute shooting for the best goalkeeper in the Championship. And if he produces the levels, then why not get another clean sheet? And then it's just like, you know, Norwich either navigating a goal to get them to Wembley or potentially obviously taking it to extra time and then penalties, which would also require him to be on good form. So Angus Gunn is the man who needs to bring the heat.
Yeah, I need to do a bit of research on this, but in my head, I can't think of him saving one. Unless
he has saved one.
Has he?
I thought there was one,
but we'll look into it anyway. Sam, who needs to bring the heat for you? I was guessing from the noise you made when Adam opened his answer that you were going to say Angus Gunn.
Yeah, I've been done in here a little bit. Paddy went for an attacking one, and I thought, oh, I'll go for Gunn.
Go for a midfield one, and then we're all happy.
But then that's just, I'm not sure midfield is the most important thing, so that would just be dishonest. So now I've got to basically choose another attacking player and say what Pad already said in a different way, or I've got to choose a defender and say what Adam already said in a different way. But because it's more fun, I'll go for an attacking one and I'll say Johnny Rowe, because although he didn't really look close to being match fit today or totally match fit, and he probably won't be on Thursday either, I think that 60 minutes will have done him some good, and there can't be many players in the Championship that are as good as him at producing individual moments. So I'll say that if he brings the heat, it's pretty similar to Sarah really. If he brings the heat, he's probably likely to pick the ball up on the halfway line and score from there, and I think a goal for Norwich would be huge. So yeah, I think if he brings the heat, to be honest, any of them really, if one of Rowe, Sarah and Sargent hits 9 out of 10, Norwich have a pretty good chance of getting to Wembley. But for me, the most likely, aside from Sarah, is Rowe. So I'll go for him, and hopefully he scores a wonder goal and proves me right.
I'm going to go for the two fullbacks for the reasons I think we've seen today. Leeds' quality in wide areas. I think maybe a slight issue there is they don't have a hell of a lot of creativity from deep midfield areas. So I think if you can stop the wide areas, you do nullify them to an extent. Right. Let's end with some predictions of how this is all going to unfold. Sam, you went last time, so you're going to go first this time. Very briefly, because I'm desperately trying to keep this under an hour. How do you see it unfolding on Thursday night, Elland Road?
I think it's going. I think it will be 0-0 for a long while. I'm not sure it will go to penalties, but I could actually see a 1-0 in extra time.
Two?
That's not the easy bit. I'll say Norwich because sounds convincing. No, to be honest, I think Leeds, but I kind of want to be positive. But yeah, I just think if I am going for a 1-0 in extra time, over 120 minutes of football, as much as Norwich's journey to this point is commendable, Leeds will have their fans behind them. And although I know the atmosphere in that fan base at the moment isn't overly positive, you know, 30,000 people behind you with excellent players, if I have to go for one very marginally, you know, with my impartial hat on, then I'll say Leeds. But these two have been very confident, so I'm sure they'll go for Norwich and level out the positivity on the podcast. But just very marginally, I'm going to say 1-0 Leeds in extra time.
Right, gents, you've got about 20 seconds each. Paddy, sorry. How do you... Sam's holding all your time. How do you see it unfolding? So let's go. Who's going to progress? What the scoreline's going to be? And maybe you can have a little bit on the game.
Norwich, extra time, 1-2. But the caveat is, if Sargent or Barnes are unavailable, then it'll be Leeds.
Okay. Adam, same question. Who goes through? What's the score going to be?
1-1 in 90. 1-1, extra time. Marcelino Nunez, Panenka penalty to win it.
If he Panenka's it, I'd...
Over the bar.
Dear. I am... So my view, and I've said this, I think, to you guys all the way through, is I expected this to end in a draw, and then I expected Leeds to have too much. So I'm going to stick with that, I think, and go for a... I think it's going to be won by a goal. And I think if Norwich get it, they'll win it. I think it's probably more likely Leeds get it. So I'm going to go 1-0 Leeds, I think. And yeah, that's a nice split. No one can accuse us of not being balanced. We've had two positive ones and two negative ones. We'll, of course, be at Elland Road to see how it all unfolds. We'll have all the coverage, all the build-up for you across our channels. That brings this podcast to a close. No one goes to Leeds with a lead. Norwich City are 90 minutes potentially from Wembley. Thanks for watching. See you soon.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.